Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is, I'm going to say it, my favorite person in New York State politics, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom.
Alan, it's always great to be with you, and I always appreciate the kind introduction. It makes it easier for me to accept the challenging topics that you will raise in the course of our conversation.
Indeed. Well, you know, you're the guy who counts the pennies and all the rest of it. How's New York doing? Are we in good shape, medium shape, or bad shape?
I'd say we're in good shape for now. There's no doubt that the challenges in the economy are of concern in terms of how we close out this budget year, more importantly, how we embark on next year's budget. You know, we do our monthly, as we've talked about on your show many times, our monthly cash report, how much money is the state collecting versus what's going out. And, you know, in the numbers for August that we just put out, we are still collecting tax revenue higher than projected. So that's good news. But those projections were lowered because they had to be, the reality of the economy slowing down. I think we're on track to keep this year's budget in balance, but we know already there's at least a $310 million budget gap projected for next year, which is not a huge gap, but when you see everything going on with the economy, you know, the concern is the obvious one. Will the numbers get worse? So that's why we have to look very carefully at the spending as we move forward. It's true for New York State. It's true certainly for New York City. There's been a lot of concern about where the city is at right now, and true really for local governments across New York State.
Well, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, the headlines have been that New York City is having its problems. You know, I don't want to get you in trouble with the mayor or anybody like that, but how are they doing?
I think New York City has greater headwinds that they have to go up against, more so than the state. But I will say, to the mayor's credit, he has been indicating that he understands that. You see that he has already called for, across the board, spending restraint for all city agencies. Look, you know, one of the challenges we have for the state is that the city's recovery is still not where we'd like it to be, right? So New York State, when you look at the recovery, we've grown back probably about 83-84% of the jobs that were lost. And the reason the numbers aren't better is that the city has been particularly lagging. Why? The city was hit by the COVID experience and the economic close down early and hard, and it's just taking much longer to recover. So all of that has an impact. The city also made some spending commitments under the prior administration for new spending tied to federal money that is being spent down. And if the economy doesn't pick up, where the revenue is going to be to pay for some of those programs? The city has their employee contracts coming due, so they're embarking on collective bargaining. So the potential for there to be a additional expense there beyond what had first been budgeted is real. The MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority that runs the buses and the subways and the trains, is a big concern because ultimately the state and the city have to play a role there. So beyond beyond the obvious risks, we estimated that there could be as much as a $10 billion risk to the city's financial plan. So the mayor is trying to get ahead of it, because for now, the city, like the state, it's okay. But you're starting to see the potential for some real out-year gaps, very much tied to whether or not the city can recover. Will tourism come back? You know, the overseas travel, I mean, hasn't really come back yet, and the overseas travelers to New York tend to spend more money than the domestic travelers. The whole hospitality industry, the office buildings being many of them half empty, folks not coming into the city, not spending money, impacts on retail, impacts on restaurants, impacts on tax revenue. So, you know, the city is contending with a lot, but I think the mayor is very much trying to get ahead of it. Look, we're tied to what's happening with the national economy, inflation, the interest rate, you know, continuing to increase, supply chain issues, some of which tied to this terrible war in Ukraine. A lot of factors somewhat beyond our control, but affecting us. On the positive, we are still adding jobs. Sales tax revenue continues to be up. August, we were up over 12%.
How
people
come?
Are spending money. Well, you know, this is the problem. You know, it's... It gets back to that question, are we in a recession or not? Well, some of the data points would seem to say we are. Other data points would seem to say we're not. So the economy is still chugging along, but the economy is in many ways contracting. So, how come? I don't know. I think part of the answer is that we have really had an unprecedented situation with the impact of a public health emergency, a public health crisis, and the recovery of that has no precedent. I mean, I don't know that anybody can look at what happened 100 years ago with the Spanish flu and however that economy recovered then, or I don't even know how relevant some of that is. But we've never – this is not like the meltdown when the Great Recession hit on Wall Street with a mortgage crisis. I mean, this is something very different. Or after 9/11, that crisis. This is something very different, and it's just taking us longer, particularly in New York, to pull back from it. But as I said, jobs are being added. People are still spending money, but people are very concerned. Alan, when I go out there, and fortunately been able to go out a little more now, you know, with COVID somewhat in the rearview mirror, there's a lot of unease out there among New Yorkers, and rightfully they're concerned for their own household budget. They're concerned about where government is going and the ability to deliver services.
You know, Governor Hochul is getting a little bit of attention for her sponsorship of a stadium. Would you like to join that train?
Well, you know, look, the Buffalo Bills, which I will remind your listeners, is the only New York team based right in New York, not based in Jersey or anywhere else. Our governor comes from that part of the state, and we all know our friends in Buffalo, the most loyal fan base anywhere. The stadium needed a new facility, so probably no shock that this would be one of her priorities. And, you know, look, a lot you could say about, you know, the timing on it. Should more of the detail been you know, disclosed up front so there could be a little more thoughtful discussion? It was kind of put in at the tail end of the budget process. But, you know, Alan, you've watched the scene longer than I have. Budget process is always one of dividing up the resources and making sure each region gets something. I spoke shortly after the stadium deal was announced and the budget was completed. Some of my friends on Long Island, people were complaining about, oh, how come Buffalo, all that money spent on the stadium? I said, well, yeah, but did you see that part of that final deal with the budget was $350 million fund for Long Island to support various projects to be determined? I said, you didn't complain about that. That, for better or for worse, is what the process is, especially in a year where there was, at least at that time, perception of a strong economy and more money. Every region got something, you know, obviously for the city, for other parts of upstate. For Western New York, the stadium became a priority. So at the end of the day, no one should be surprised that there was a deal, whether it could have been a better deal or not. We weren't part of the negotiation. We had no sign-off roll on it. So, I can't give you a reaction on that. But
mean as the controller's office, right?
Yeah, controller's office. Right. Yep.
Okay, well.
You know, which is that broader issue that often comes up is a lot of decisions are made that one would think should be reviewed by our office, that often the way it's set up, it's not. And that's one of the big contentions right now. As you know, the legislature passed a bill to restore our contract oversight that had been suspended under the prior governor with an agreement from the legislature, and overwhelmingly passed. I give credit to the Senate and the Assembly for doing that, but governor hasn't indicated whether or not she's going to sign it. I think anything that increases accountability, transparency, checks and balances, that's something people want to see in government today. So we are hoping that that contract oversight restoration, in fact, happens. So I hope she does sign that bill, bring us back to where the law was for over 100 years.
Well, it would be stupid for her not to sign such a bill and not to give you those powers. The people of New York State need to know somebody's watching, what's going on.
Well, I mean, that's what our office is set up to do and what we're trained to do. And I feel, look, hey, if something goes through that people want to raise questions about, if we've signed off on it, it's protective of the executive, whoever the governor may be, to say, well, wait a minute, the controller looked at it and they signed off on it. And I also think for people who may be looking to try to game the system or get a favored treatment. There are always debates about that sometimes when there's more limited oversight. We've seen a lot of issues over the years, when there hasn't been adequate oversight. I think it's also a source of deterrence. If you know that it's not just whatever you work out with the governor's office, that you've got to go through another step, and that step involves an independent oversight, I think that might get some folks to think twice before they try to subvert the system. You recall some of what came out of, the money, the Buffalo Billion money, and some of that that we're all familiar with, and ended up with some folks being convicted of some not good things. Maybe they would have thought twice about trying to subvert the system if they knew our office was going to play a role in oversight.
Do you have to be really, really tough in your role as comptroller? I mean, do you really have to say, put them up, because people are always trying to game the system in their own interest?
Well, I mean, I'd like to think what we do is we do our due diligence. We do it in a responsible way. We try very hard, to keep it above the politics, because you could easily, use this role to just take shots at different people. And we're that's not what we're about. We're really looking for integrity in the process, number one. Number two, best value for the taxpayers and for the state. So what I try very hard to do is keep it very, very level-headed. I'd say we're strong, and our, our team is certainly trained to do the work in the proper way. But we do it in a very professional way, and I think that's the credibility of the office. We have people on staff that have been trained in the procurement rules, the laws, the regulations. They know how to catch, fraud. That's what they're trained to do. And they're career people, they're civil service people, they're not political people. That's what the office is set up. So when we've seen this history of carving us out of some of that responsibility, certainly with the prior administration, even to an extent, this year's budget did a little more of that with what the current governor proposed. The emergency orders during COVID, we understand some of that was necessary, but should have gone on as long as it did, because part of, the emergency process is to, again, go around competitive bidding, go around procurement, normal procurement procedures, go around controller oversight and review. In the long run, if you want to argue that perhaps some things could have been done better if those emergency powers weren't there, yeah, maybe so. But again, we had no playbook for the COVID experience. So, hindsight is always easy to say, well, you should have done this, should have done that. But let's hope we learn for whatever the next emergency is going to be, and try to keep as much as possible appropriate levels of oversight on any kind of state spending, even in response to an emergency.
So is New York City overbuilt at this stage of the game?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, one, I think, would probably argue that in terms of affordable housing, not overbuilt. I think it would be a fair comment to say that Do we need more office towers in Manhattan right now, given the fact that many of them are not exactly fully occupied? That's why we raised the concern about the proposal with regard to the redevelopment around Penn Station. So Penn Station needs to be fixed up, no question about it, if any of your listeners have been there of late. But part of this overall deal is the development around Penn Station and additional office towers. You know, I think you really need to do a deeper dive on the numbers that are attached to this proposal. When it came up before the Public Authorities Control Board for an initial sign-off for the first step of the approval process, we, meaning the controls office, had said, you know, perhaps you should take more time to really analyze whether the financing of this overall plan really will work. And, you know, the answer back was, well, this is only the first step. There'll be other opportunities to look at this. But, you know, what happens, Alan, you start a process of approval and suddenly it takes on a life of its own. So I think it's a fair question in terms of the office market. You know, is it really a time to be building many more office towers in New York City? Obviously, we don't have a policy role in all that. We just, you know, raise that question.
So I have a triple question for you. Inflation, stock market, and pension fund. Of course, you have a huge pension fund, which you are the sole trustee for, watching things about the way it's going, and that's a huge part of the stock market. And then there's always inflation in New York. How are we doing?
Well, the good news with the pension fund is that we're in a position of strength. We value the fund March 31st. It's the end of the state fiscal year. And this year, even with what was happening in March when the war in the Ukraine started, that terrible war, we still ended the fiscal year with a 9.51 positive return. So way ahead of what our long-term goal is, which is a 5.9% positive return. So we actually, Alan, ended the year, and that March 31st number is our official final audited number that goes into all our calculations, in terms of how much money we have, what kind of assets we have versus our liabilities long term, what we have to pay out for our pensioners current and future. We actually, in terms of our funded ratio, 102.9% funded. So I don't want to say overfunded, wrong way to put it, but it's certainly a fully funded pension plan. Now, you go into what happened over the summer and what continues now. Much volatility in the markets, some of it related to inflation, interest rates, and the global economy. Our first quarter estimated results for the end of June, we were minus a little over 8%. So it's been a tougher time for us. But because we go into this challenging time well-funded, your listeners who are retired from state or local government don't have to worry. People who are working today, you know, we got plenty of money for them. It's the person starting work, you know, today or tomorrow for the city of Albany or the state of New York. We're worried about them, making sure we have enough money down the road. But we have a diversified portfolio. We are not tied only to how the stock market performs. And we know the stock market goes up, the stock market goes down. I'm confident we're positioned for the long haul. We're in better shape than other states, you know, going into this tough time. But make no mistake about it, this is shaping up to be a much more challenging year for us, and we'll see how we end up on March 31st. We have plenty of time for things to get better, but it's definitely a tough investment environment out there.
Governor's race, Hochul versus Zeldin. Is there really any contest here? And why have the Republicans chosen such a right-wing candidate?
Well, I can't speak to why the Republicans have done that. And remember, they kind of coalesced around him when it looked like the previous governor was going to be running. So maybe there was some calculation there. I think Kathy Hochul is in a very strong position. She inherited the job at a difficult time politically, and as it turned out, a difficult time in terms of the economy. But she is a hard worker. She's out there. People like her, and I think they respect her. Obviously, New York continues to be a strong Democratic state, but I think the Republicans also see an opportunity. They see an opportunity because people are concerned, rightfully so. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. They saw some political wins moving towards that direction. My home turf on Long Island last year, 2021, Nassau County, bad, bad year for Democrats after a number of years of success, increased enrollment, and yet you saw big Republican victories in Nassau County. Zeldin comes from Suffolk County, so I think they're believing, we'll see what the numbers will finally be. Long Island could be good territory for them. Big concern for Democrats always is what's going to be the turnout in the city. You know, once the primaries are done, will our base in the city know it's still important to come out in November? But I think Kathy Hochul coming from upstate, we're going to do better in the upstate regions than perhaps we've done with, you know, prior tops of the ticket. So I think Kathy Hochul's in a strong position, but the Republicans have been desperate for an opportunity. They haven't had a statewide victory since George Pataki, and I think they feel that perhaps they will have a shot this year. But you look at the reaction to, especially among women voters, I hear it all the time, not just among Democratic women, the reaction to the Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade has galvanized that vote in a significant way that I don't think anybody had anticipated was going to be happening when we started this year. So I think, you know, the Democratic base is also feeling better about the Biden administration and, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act. Gasoline prices are coming down. They're not $5 anymore. I think that has a positive impact. So I think it's a better time for Democrats right now, perhaps, than it was 2 months ago. But it's not November 8th yet. A lot could happen between now and November 8th. So you got to work. The Democratic team has to work hard, not take any vote for granted.
Speaking of the Democratic team, Tom DiNapoli, on redistricting, did the Democrats make a mistake the way they did it? In other words, Nadler ends up facing and beating Maloney. I thought that was not a good move. I wonder what you think.
Well, the consequence of the master drawing the lines obviously created some bad situations. You know, we only lost one seat this year with reapportionment, but New York has been losing seats for years. So seniority becomes very important. So to have two very senior members and to lose one of them, whoever you might have preferred of those two, is not good for New York. No question about it. Mondaire Jones, a great young member of Congress from the Hudson Valley, really impressed so many people. He ended up having to try to run, you know, in lower Manhattan. Didn't work, you know. So, yeah, there was some negative fallout. There's no question about it. Now, I think it would be fair to say that the view was that, you know, in Republican states, the Republicans do all they can to maximize their representation. We should do that, you know, as Democrats here. But, you know, the challenge was we have changed some of the laws affecting this. It made it harder to just do whatever you want. People voted on that. It was a constitutional amendment as well. And perhaps, I think, I'm not saying something that hasn't been said before, there was an overreach in terms of some of those maps. I ended up in the first drawing of the congressional lines. I was in the district that went from Suffolk County through Nassau, through Queens, through the Bronx, up to the Connecticut border in Westchester. Wow. You know, so no surprise, you know, some folks looked at that and said, nah, probably doesn't pass the smell test. And then, of course, when it went up to the Court of Appeals, there was obviously a lot of surprise that basically a democratically appointed Court of Appeals, you know, threw out a Democratic map. But hey, whatever, that's what happened. Perhaps it was an overreach, but you know, look, I still think the Democrats are going to fare well in the state Senate races, although there'll be some more competitive ones than there would have been otherwise. And I think the Assembly majority is obviously solid. And, you know, there are opportunities for some new faces. Hey, Pat Ryan is a guy for you to – I don't know if you've had him on your show yet, but congressman from the Hudson Valley, fabulous, great guy, got a great future. He's running – got to run now. He ran in one district. Now he's running in the next district. But, you know – especially reapportionment year, opportunity for some new talent to emerge. Pat Ryan is from Ulster is one of those great rising stars that I think is going to be a great leader for us in New York.
In other words, you like him.
I think he's terrific.
that's great. Okay. So, you know, I think when Nadler beat Maloney, that was bad for the Democrats because Maloney is a woman as opposed to, you know, Nadler, who's sort of guy who's been around for a long time.
Well, they both pronounce her. You know, Carolyn Maloney, as you know, is an incredibly hard worker. I mean, she's relentless. She's delivered, you know, for her district and by extension for all of Manhattan, her work on 9/11, helping the, you know, the survivors and those who were affected, you know, health impacts. She's a real champion in that regard, delivered money for the MTA, you know, the Second Avenue subway line. You, a long list, certainly chairing a very important committee in the House. And in a year where abortion rights are center concern, obviously, I think you will see more women elected to all kinds of positions. It's a loss, but you know, you can't take away from Jerry Nadler the fact that he has been a strong progressive voice coming out of the West Side that produced many strong progressive voices. He has tremendous loyalty and following in his district, and you saw what happened towards the end. He got the New York Times endorsement, particularly in Manhattan. That still means something.
Sure.
Chuck Schumer came out for him. So I think it was viewed as a close contest, and just some things fell into place towards the end for Jerry. And it ended up not even being close in terms of the vote. So
I only have 2 minutes. So I want to interrupt here and ask you about online gambling revenues. What are the numbers in New York?
Well, I don't have the most up-to-date numbers for you, except to say that, yes, more money is coming in from gaming. As always, it's not as much money as those who advocated for it at the outset had argued. But, yeah, there is a net plus of it. I do think we should have a concern as people are more anxious about the economy. Will they be spending money on entertainment like gaming? So I think some of that is a softer kind of revenue. We certainly shouldn't base our state budget on gaming revenue. It's always been my point of view.
Is it corruptive?
I think it's corrosive in terms of for many people who get addicted to it. It's corrosive to people's personal financial strength. Too many people get addicted to it. We've had audits that have pointed out that New York has not done a good job of putting money into addiction services to get people out of compulsive gambling habits. So for some families, it's going to be ruinous.
Well, Tom DiNapoli, we are out of time. Our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, may I say, a friend of mine. Comptroller, thanks so much for joining us.
Alan, and you are a friend of mine, and to all New Yorkers, always great to have a conversation with you.
Your picture is on my wall.
And your bobblehead is on my desk.